Hello everybody, Marzone, and this is Marzone's Gadget Talk for Tuesday, 24th of August, 2021. You may have noticed something and that I didn't upload last Thursday. Yes, I couldn't do a Thursday episode because my stomach decided to be a bit funny and become kind of sick, so I mean, I kind of skipped the Thursday episode. I thought I'd do it later in the weekend, but then the weekend kind of came by and sort of it ran by, so, you know, procrastination, everything got the best of me. But hey, now we got it's a new week and we got a lot of things to talk about, and it's heating up, guys. Techtober is around the corner, obviously. One thing that I probably want to make a point of is that I kind of have exams in October, so I won't be able to do the podcast during that point. So, and these are super important, you know, so I'm able to go to university and stuff. But oh well. Then again, we're coming over to the end of the year. Can't believe 2021 has gone by very quickly. We're literally halfway through, and there are a lot of devices and products being launched, obviously, ahead of that fall schedule, that winter season where people do run out and buy devices. And speaking of which, we got plenty of devices being announced and being shown off, and they're looking pretty cool for what they are. So let's talk about them real quick. And towards the end, Xbox is rolling out its game streaming functionality to its consoles. We'll talk about that obviously towards the end, but yeah, let's get rolling with all the new goodies that we're getting, shall we? So first we're going to start with Realme, because they're really trying to leap forward, and they've announced a bunch of new devices. Now in Pakistan, yesterday they did their fan event, fan festival, so they've sold, apparently according to Realme, they've sold more over 2 million phones in Pakistan, which I think is an impressive feat for a brand that doesn't have much of a presence in this country and is available widely online and offline, but again, not many people, but I do know some relatives of mine who have bought Realme phones, but the thing is, they're not as wide-reaching as Xiaomi or Tecno or Infinix, who probably have a much bigger sales volume, but it's impressive despite what they have on their hands. I'm sure the C series has propelled them to 2 million phones sold. Again, I was looking at some document ages weeks ago, and it said Realme has like a single percentage point market share in Pakistan. I do hope they do grow their market share really by releasing more and more competitive phones. I do think that more Narzo and C-series phones could get them to that, could get them in top 5 probably in the next couple of years if they try, though. And if they strengthen their distribution game, where they are in more stores and they have their own online store, would probably do wonders, not just relying on online marketplaces. But oh well, during that event they talked about some of Realme's new devices that we're going to talk about, obviously, in a few moments. And they showed off the C25S, which already was released in a few other countries, but now it's available in Pakistan at a pretty competitive price of, I think, under 30K. That's what I know. So that's interesting nonetheless. But also at this event, they showed off the GT Master and GT Master Explorer, or GT Explorer Master. It's quite complicated, but there's Explorer Master, and then there's the Master, and then there's a GT, and these are three phones that are in the GT series. So there was the X series before, that is Realme's flagship series with top-notch specs, the fastest cameras, the fastest charging, the fastest displays, everything you'd performance. That was the X series, but now they killed it off for the GT series. The GT is everything what I mean by premium high-end performance from Realme, that is between $300 to $600, literally. And I mentioned the prices in dollars this time, not in euros, which tells you that Realme is trying to target the global audience in a big way. So interestingly, they showed the phones up. We knew a lot about these phones already, the GT Master and the GT Explorer Master. The GT is already out, and that's a pretty good phone for around $500 to $600 for what it is. So in case you missed it, we have the Explorer Master and Master Edition, but generally it's the Master Edition series. But you have the main GT, Realme GT, which has a Snapdragon 888. It's got a pretty good camera. I've kind of forgotten the specs, sadly, but in terms of performance, the GT Explorer Master is sort of bottom down from GT itself. It has a Snapdragon 870 processor with up to 12 gigabytes of RAM, whereas the GT Master has the Snapdragon 778G processor with up to 8 gigabytes of RAM. Both phones could do 5G without a problem. Obviously, Realme is trying to be a brand that has 5G phones like a boss. Both phones feature a 120Hz Samsung AMOLED display, as it's mentioned. But interestingly, the Explorer Master has, as I'll call it, has a 56-degree curved display with HDR10 Plus support, Dolby Atmos dual speakers, and a tactile engine. So, you know, the vibrators there can be a bit accurate. The Master Edition has a 32-megapixel selfie camera, a Sony sensor, obviously. Whereas you got a 64-megapixel main sensor on the Master. The Explorer Master, though, has a 50-megapixel Sony IMX 766 camera. So yeah, you have pretty impressive specs for what it is. But in case you're curious about performance benchmark in that sense, GT has a 888, then the GT Explorer Master has the 870, and then the GT Master Edition, which is what everyone could, well, I'd say what a lot of people should be getting. In terms of price, it's pretty good. It has a 778G, which is, again, bottom down both phones. So you're wondering about price about these phones. We've heard a lot about these phones. I mean, they're coming in all these wonderful colors. The GT Explorer Master comes in four different colors. White, so gradient. Dawn, also gradient. And then you have gray and apricot colors, which are sort of shaped like a suitcase is designed by a person called Naoto Fukasawa, and it looks a little bit like a rough, like one of those rugged suitcases. If you've had one of those rugged trolley suitcases, it looks a little bit like that. But in case you're curious about the price, the Explorer Master starts from $499 for the base spec 128GB version, 8 gigs of RAM. Add probably 4 gigs of RAM and double the storage, and you can get it for $549. And the Master Edition, which is, I think, what a lot of people would probably be getting and would be available quite widely, will start from $399, so it's almost similar to what we've heard already, for a base spec 128GB variant. And obviously, you can add 2 more gigs of RAM and double the storage for $449, which I think is a good price to start with for these phones, given the performance. I think the Explorer Master is probably where the GT would be, if obviously the GT doesn't grow up in price. The GT would probably be around $600, $700 already. So the Explorer Master is a bit of a bargain in that sense. The Master is a good price for what it is for a mid-range phone with mid-range specs, especially compared to your A52 Redmi Note 10 Pro probably at that point. The Poco phones, you know, the X3 GT, the F3. At that kind of price, you have this phone, which is interesting. So if you've really been waiting for a solid mid-range phone from Realme, then the Master Edition is here, so that's pretty interesting. It's already available on AliExpress, so you can go get it if you want to. You'll have to import it, obviously, from AliExpress. It's not that difficult, but again, if you live in Europe, you can get it through AliExpress and in certain regions, and you get a discount price from $300 roughly, and $340 for the top spec maxed out variant. So that's interesting nonetheless. So those were the two phones, and they're already available in that sense. The Master, you can already get it off AliExpress, literally. Then there was a Realme book that they talked about that came out with the phones. Fortunately, the Realme book is the first laptop that has come from sort of Realme and sort of the overall parent company of Realme, BBK Electronics. There's Oppo and Vivo, but they haven't had their own laptops yet, so Realme has come out with their own laptop, and I think it makes sense given its branding and positioning as a brand that really is daring to leap forward. But as I said, this is a laptop that's promising to really be competitive with your Xiaomi's and Huawei's of the world in that sense. I mean, if you compare it to your Redmi Book and the MateBook Pro and MateBook Lite, maybe, if there's ever a MateBook like that, it kind of competes with those laptops, and probably did several ultra thin laptops that you can get off AliExpress also. I mean, it is an interesting package that you're getting here. To start with, it's a 14-inch laptop. that has a 2160 by 1440 resolution display, 3:2 aspect ratio, 90% screen to body ratio, really again competing with your MateBook and stuff in terms of screen to body ratio, 100% sRGB color gambit. It's an IPS display, thankfully, which is pretty cool. And it's quite squarish. So again, 3:2, allowing you to pack more productivity in that display, so you can sort of run two tabs without a problem, and you can see a whole lot more vertically. So you get a bit more vertical real estate. You have peak. The screen is peaked at 400 nits of brightness. You could take it outside and really still look at it out in the bright sunshine. Fortunately, the laptop glass, the front glass is protected with Gorilla Glass, so that's not a problem to start with. The Realme Book has either the Intel Core i3 or i5 processors. These are probably the Ultrabook variants, pretty much. There's no information about which processor it is, but it's probably the Ultrabook variant, so it's dual core, but it's battery efficient and all. That's pretty cool. You get Iris Xe graphics, not a big deal, but again, will come in handy for the odd Minecraft session. You have a dual fan cooling solution, so keeps the laptop nice and cool under your legs. You can get up to 16 gigabytes of LPDDR4X RAM. I think it may be soldered, possibly. 512 gigabytes of PCIe SSD storage, so you can change the drive out in the future, which is interesting. In terms of I/O, you have a USB Type-C port, which is USB 3.0, a USB 4 Thunderbolt Type-C port, big deal, Thunderbolt 4 port. This laptop can do Thunderbolt, which I think is pretty impressive, given that there are a few Windows laptops that offer you Thunderbolt without a problem. And that helps because you can add faster storage, you can connect hubs, you can use eGPUs if you want to use eGPUs with this bad boy, and you can play games at 60 frames a second. If you don't want to use cloud gaming, though, it's pretty impressive. So it's a big deal to have Thunderbolt 4, pretty much, and that with the Type-C port. So again, this is kind of looking to be competing with the MacBook Air. Try not to say this is the MacBook Air, almost, but it kind of is. It has a Type-A port, so regular USB port, USB 3.0, a headphone jack, Wi-Fi 6, stereo speakers. Again, competing with the likes of the Redmi Book and the MateBook from Huawei in that sense. It'll come with Windows 10, but you can upgrade to Windows 11 straight away without a problem. And it has a PC Connect feature. Again, this is similar to what Huawei offers on their laptops with their phones. So if both devices are on the same Wi-Fi connection, you can sort of mirror your phone screen on your laptop. So Realme is now offering that feature, which is pretty cool nonetheless. On top of that, you have a 65-watt fast charger included in the box. You can do 65-watt fast charging. And you get, you get a 65-watt charger in the box that lets you do 0 to 50% charge in 30 minutes. Pretty impressive, because it takes, for context, the laptop I'm using, recording this on, takes about a good hour or two, or 2 hours probably, to charge up from 0 to 100. So half an hour to get you half a charge is not bad. So, and for context also, this laptop will last you 11 hours. So again, competing with your XPS 13, your MacBook Air, your MateBooks, your Redmi Book, I mean, those kind of laptops. I mean, this laptop's come in that sense. And also, you could, it can also do 30 watt fast charging for your phone if you have a Realme phone to start with. So all in all, I mean, I've talked very fast in general. It is a really nice looking Ultrabook, and the first from Realme, so it's an interesting device nonetheless. If you're curious about price, now, they showed it off in Pakistan. They didn't announce the price. Weirdly, I've tried to check all over the place, but I can't find the prices. But the Realme Book will start in India, is where they've announced the pricing, from 47,000 rupees, 46.99, so 47k. Indian rupees. So if we do the math right there, that would roughly be almost 95,000 Pakistani rupees, under 1 lakh. That's impressive. I mean, like, to start with, the newest Dell laptops probably start beyond 1 lakh 20, and Realme is pumping out a base spec laptop, and this is the base spec they're offering in India, which they'll have with a Core i3 processor, 8 gigs of RAM and 256 gigabytes of storage. So base specifications. starting from 47,000 Indian rupees, that's about 95,000 Pakistani rupees, or $632, which is impressive. $630 plus for base spec Realme Book, which is impressive, actually. Again, similar Ultrabooks would start at well beyond that kind of price, around more than $900 at best. And you get this for starting $632. So Realme is really out to disrupt the laptop market in the same way they've done with earbuds and smartphones. So that's impressive. And the i5 variant with the same amount of RAM and double the storage will set you back 59,999 Indian rupees, which is about $807, or roughly about 1,20,000 Pakistani rupees, which is impressive. Which is, again, for an ultrabook with such specifications, with the latest Intel processors, the fastest SSD storage out there, USB-C ports, Thunderbolt, ultra-thin design, it's quite affordable. I mean, it's quite competitively priced, if you look at it. And I'm being honest here. I mean, if you compare it to what you can get in the market, it's pretty competitive. I mean, under $1,000, which is impressive. I mean, ultrabooks aren't any cheaper, really, but it's impressive, and it's Realme. So it's going to be pretty impressive nonetheless. In China, though, this will cost you the i5 variant will start at $663, so that's 4,300 yuan RMB, which is actually even more cheaper, but that's in China, though. But the maxed out spec, double the RAM included, will be available for 4,700 yuan RMB, which is $725. Then again, that's in China, obviously. Income's a little lower. The yuan is a little bit stronger, so it's a little lower. In India and probably in Pakistan, you gotta factor in import duties and taxes and all. That could increase the price a little bit, and also in Europe and stuff. So that's something to keep in mind, being a laptop. But nonetheless, it's quite competitive pricing for what it is. It'll be available in India from the 30th of August, and in China it'll be available pretty much tomorrow. In that sense, so it's kind of impressive what you're getting here. I mean, I'm genuinely impressed. I mean, it's gonna be a little bit more expensive in Pakistan from the looks of it because of import duties, but it is a very competitively priced phone. If they're a laptop, I'm trying not to say phone, it's quite a competitively priced laptop. Again, if they're able to launch it under 1 lakh, I could see a lot of people buying this as an ultrabook, as a laptop that can do a lot. And I mean, you wouldn't have to look over, say, a Dell or a HP laptop. I mean, again, if they offer it with competitive pricing in Pakistan, this could shake up the laptop market in that sense. I mean, so yeah, you gotta give credit where it's due. I mean, Realme is trying to shake things up and really daring to leap in that sense. So pretty good things to see from these fellas. One thing I want to quickly clarify is that the i3 variant of the Realme Book will not have Thunderbolt, whereas the i5 and i7 variants have Thunderbolt port built right in. So the i3 has like two USB-C ports, but they'll do USB capabilities, and then the i5 and i7 variants, probably if you get the i5, it'll have the Thunderbolt capability, which is something to keep in mind. But then again, pretty competitively priced for what it is. I mean, if you really look at the competition in that sense. Switching gears to Redmi have a new main affordable flagship phone, in their sense, the affordable phone that I think everyone should run out and get because it costs nothing and it really is a solid phone for what it is. And we're talking about the Redmi 10. It's already been leaked, it got leaked, but now Xiaomi hasn't officially announced that they're releasing the Redmi 10. It's an interesting phone. You get a lot of interesting things for under $250 for what it is. To start with, you get 18 watt fast charging, 5000 mAh power battery, 50 megapixel camera, 90 hertz display. What else? Headphone jack. Again, all for under $250. Under 200 starting, if you look at the base spec. So it's an interesting phone. I mean, it is the Redmi 9 series has been a bit of a big hit, and now Xiaomi is really stepping it up with the Redmi 10. So I have to say Xiaomi 10, but it's actually the Redmi 10, and it's their main affordable phone that you should be getting if you're looking to get Redmi and you don't want fancy schmancy extras or even faster performance or faster charging or anything, if you just want to get a decent solid phone that doesn't cost a lot of money, this is the phone to get. To start with, you have a Helio G88 processor, one of the fastest G series processors in its class for now, a 6.5-inch FHD plus display with a punch hole notch 8-megapixel camera, 2400 by 1080p resolution, 90 hertz refresh rate. You can adjust the refresh rate, thankfully, all the way down to 45 hertz, to 60, then to 90. That saves a lot of battery life. But don't worry about battery. The processor is pretty good. The display is, you could tweak the refresh rate. But you have, 18-watt fast charging, so you could top the phone back up with no problems. 5,000 mAh battery, 9-watt reverse wire charging, so you can charge others' phone using that. And you get a 22.5-watt in-box charger. Hey, some phones no longer have a charger in the box, but hey, you're getting a charger. But not just that, you're getting a slightly higher voltage charger, so you could do a couple of extra things. And you can either, you could charge, you know, your other buddy's devices and stuff without a problem. I'm sure they're able to figure out a way to charge 18 watts without draining out your phone in that sense. You got a 50 megapixel main camera, 8 megapixel ultrawide sensor, 2 megapixel macro, 2 megapixel depth. Again, not a big deal, but again, pretty good for what it is. Weighs 181 grams, comes in three colorways, carbon gray, pebble white, sea blue, has a side-mounted fingerprint sensor like the Redmi Note 10 series. You get dual stereo speakers, 3.5 millimeter headphone jack, and yeah, and runs Android 11 out of the gate. So nothing, you're not running a year older software. You're getting the latest version of Android right away. It's going to be available with either 4 or 6 gigabytes of RAM and 64 or 120 gigabytes of RAM. Storage, 128 gigs of ROM or 64 gigs. So you have that choice. So it's pretty impressive for what it is. Then you're getting big battery, decently fast chip, very fast processor. I mean, to expect a 90 hertz display after 2 or 3 years, 2 or 3 years later, you're seeing a 90 hertz display on a phone. And it's LCD still, but it's pretty good. 18 watt fast charging, 50 megapixel camera, it's pretty good. Now, it's good and all, but you can now buy it from Xiaomi's official sales channels, though. It's the press release coded that is available from August 20th. That's now August 24th. So it's already available. You can get it from AliExpress and stuff. If you go to AliExpress, you're able to find it without a problem. Now, the base spec, 4 gigabytes of RAM, 64 gigabytes of storage, starts at, get this, $179. The storage in RAM is not much. It's quite measly, if you ask me. But it's pretty impressive. $179 for the base spec. That really does pack a lot of punches for the price. Double the storage is $20 extra, $199. So that's $200 right away. And 2 extra gigabytes of RAM and 128 gigabytes of storage maxed out is $219 overall. So $220 for the maxed out spec, which is impressive. Pretty good for what it is. And again, this is going to be a hit. This is going to be a sleeper hit from Xiaomi. And I'm feeling it right here. It'll be a sleeper hit, to say the least. So, yeah, it's an exciting phone, nonetheless. Definitely should check out the Redmi 10 if you're really in the market for an affordable phone under $250. If you're not really looking to get something beyond $300, it's a solid phone for the price. I mean, I get this for my parents if they're not picky about Samsung or Apple in that sense. Or even for myself as a second or third phone. Or just a phone in general if I want a phone. I don't want to pay $1,000 for a phone, though. It's pretty impressive what you're getting here for the money. And I think a lot of people will be happy with the specs you're getting here. The big battery and the fast display. I mean, you're getting a lot for your money in that sense. All right, next up in news that isn't really news and a shocker, but again, we gotta talk about it, really. Now, this is interesting. According to XDA developers, and they've kind of found this out, that Xiaomi is no longer going to be using the Mi brand name. No Mi without you. Get it? But they're sort of ditching the Mi branding. Some say Mi, some say Mi. I would pronounce it as Mi. But some say MI. I think MI is also logical. It's a little confusing, but according to XDA developers, Xiaomi released a statement to the folks at XDA developers, and they sort of now announced that going forward, from say for upcoming phones, devices, IoT devices, they're now going to refer their devices. They're ditching the MI name in that sense, and they're going to just refer to their phones as Xiaomi this and Xiaomi that. About time. I think it's a sensible thing, maybe to, you know, straighten to make things more straightforward in that sense. According to them, they're looking to move forward and sort of now call their devices all Xiaomi. So for context, we're talking about the Mi Mix 4 over a week or two ago, and we're calling it Mi Mix. Now they're officially called it the Xiaomi Mix 4. So it's obvious that down the road, they're going to start calling all their phones either Xiaomi or Redmi. And I think it's to clean up their brand, to keep it a bit more straightforward in front of global consumers. And now Xiaomi is starting to be on the global spotlight, being the second biggest phone brand in the world, the third biggest phone brand. I mean, now we're in a world where Apple, Samsung, Xiaomi. And MI would be a confusing sort of, wait, that's the sub-brand, right? Oh, there's Redmi and there's Mi. Oh, okay, this is a brand and a brand. So I think Xiaomi is trying to cut the confusion of a brand and a brand, or a kind of Russian doll-ism with brands, by kind of dropping the MI name and switching straight to Xiaomi and referring the phones as Xiaomi 12, Xiaomi 11T, and it's kind of interesting nonetheless. And I think they've also referred this for all the other devices going forward. TVs, laptops, IoT devices, scooters, EVs. They're going to get into electric cars. And this is when they announced the Mi 11, that they're going to get into EVs. So they need a straightforward branding. And I think Xiaomi really does need to call themselves Xiaomi. So I think it's a logical choice going forward. And again, more and more people are buying their devices. And in more and more regions, their phones are being sold. But yeah, kind of sad to see the MI name go. I mean, this is it really has become one of the more iconic brand names out there in the world of smartphones, weirdly. But in China, they refer themselves to Xiaomi. Their phones are called Xiaomi this and that. So it's kind of starting to happen also in China. But I think they're trying to make things more straightforward, as I've mentioned earlier. But of course, again, their statement again has gone a bit like this. Starting in Q3 of 2021, Xiaomi's product series MI will be renamed to Xiaomi. This change will unify our global brand presence and close the perception gap between the brand and its products. See? They said it. They called it out, you know. But then again, they made a good point here. Xiaomi products represent the pinnacle of technology and offer a premium experience. Redmi products bring big innovation at a more accessible price point and are aimed at a younger audience. So they're really trying to, again, really iron things out and sort of make it more straightforward. So that's interesting nonetheless. And on top of that, Xiaomi's announced on their Twitter, global Twitter page, that they're doing an event on September 15th. And we've seen a lot of phones this year. They've been pumping out a lot of phones. But this event next month, they're going to show off the Mi 11T, which is sort of their mid-season upgrade of the Mi 11. They'll have the Snapdragon 888, possibly the 888 Plus would be nice to have in that sense. The Dimensity 1200, probably 120Hz displays. Who knows? There could be another foldable. You never know. So that's interesting development nonetheless. Well over a week ago, or the week before last week, we talked about Samsung's foldables. And we pretty much in depth, sort of. That was Thursday's episode I think 2 weeks ago, probably at this point. And now we're hearing a lot of things about Samsung's foldables. And there's a lot of details we're now knowing about these foldables in and of itself. So let's kind of go through them. I mean, interestingly. First is XDA developers breaking the story that if you unlock the Z Fold 3's bootloader, they literally disable all the cameras on the phone. Yikes. Now, if you know Android and you live in the world of Android, you know you could sort of jailbreak your phone. That's called unlocking your bootloader, and then you can put custom ROMs on it, and you can sort of play around with the software deep down. Now, we do know that if you unlock your bootloader, streaming apps and financial services, this kind of stop working. Some banking apps would kind of be affected with rooted phones. They won't work because there's the issue of getting hacked and data sort of being ripped under the carpet, you could say, with the bootloader being unlocked. And streaming services probably don't do it for DRM reasons, like Netflix. It won't stream at 1080p because of it. But this is extreme. Disabling cameras. I think this is something to do with the idea that certain functionality that you have to communicate with the software, it would kind of go away if you unlock the bootloader. You can get kind of be tweaked. So Samsung disables the cameras. But that's extreme a little bit, not gonna lie. That's a bit extreme. That's kind of like Apple warning you that you have unauthorized battery if you change the battery on the iPhone 12. In that kind of sense. So that kind of sucks. I was surprised to hear this. So that's shocking. And then on the flip side, what if you break the screen on your Z Fold 3 and Z Flip 3? It won't cost you an arm, a leg, and a kidney. That's the thing we're going to say. Now, obviously, if you buy these foldables in some regions, they will offer free replacements, but you'll have to check with Samsung from region to region to region. You'll have to check with them whether they'll offer a free screen replacement the first time you crack your screen. But in case that's not available, or Samsung Care Plus is not off the option, repairing the inner display of the Z Fold 3 will set you back $480 in the US. But previously, it would cost you $550 for the inner display, the foldable display, and then the $150 will be for your outer display if that gets cracked at all. For the Z Flip 3, the Z Flip gang, it's actually cheaper. The foldable display, as it is, will set you back $370 as is. That's a display. And then the outer display is a little bigger, obviously, and there's glass around it. That's about $100. So, again, that's up from the first Z Flip, which costed $500 to repair for the foldable display, the flip-out display, and $100, so it's not changed much. But then again, it's gotten a little bit cheaper. Again, if you don't want to, if you don't have Samsung Care Plus, or you don't get that option for free repairs or anything like that. But interestingly enough, if you pre-order these phones already, you'll get Samsung Care Plus for like the first year or two. And if your screen gets cracked in that time and it's covered by Samsung Care Plus, you get a free repair, which is not a bad idea, pretty much. You do get a discount on your screen replacement. So for context, it should cost $250 to repair your display. So that's interesting nonetheless. But then again, as I've said before, these are prices for the US. For the rest of the world, depending on where you are, you'll have to check with Samsung or Samsung's sort of official repair folks or support center for latest prices or information. It could be a little bit more expensive, but then again, it's not that expensive compared to last year. It's getting better because these phones are being sold on a broader basis, and it should get cheaper over time. But then again, if you just get the screen replacement as it is for the price, it is cheaper nonetheless. So then again, do check with Samsung's technical support or repair center, or obviously when you buy these phones, do ask them how much it'll cost to change the screen. I'd love to know how much it would be in Pakistan, or whether they'll cover the first screen replacement. Because honestly, you're paying a lot of money for these phones, and they should definitely offer, it should be easy to repair the screen if something goes wrong with it, or it gets cracked, or it starts to crease a little bit. You'll have to change the displays probably down the road, but it should get cheaper, or it should be easy in that sense. But then again, do check with them. I mean, it should be cheaper or a little bit more depending on where you live in that sense. On the flip side, despite the cost of repairing the foldable display, these phones are quite popular. In Korea, 800,000 pre-orders have been placed for these phones. Both phones have been ordered 800,000 times. According to Yonhap News, 800,000 units were pre-ordered, during the week-long pre-order period in South Korea. 600,000 were through carriers, because you can buy it from mobile carriers too on contract. And then 200,000 were pre-ordered as unlocked devices full price, you know, because they can. And there are some wealthy people in South Korea, you know, they're getting wealthy from Coupang going public and all, you know. I mean, yeah, I mean, if you bought stocks in BTS's label and Coupang and, you know, you cashed out, then you can afford this phone in that sense. But in case you're curious, what people in Korea have bought in Samsung's home market, 60% of folks bought the Z Flip 3, over 40% who've got the Z Fold 3. So the Flip is also popular in South Korea. You can't go wrong. Flip phones are popular all over the world, especially in South Korea and Japan, because over there, there was a culture of flip phones and such tiny, cute phones and stuff, you know. It's there. So I'm not surprised, frankly, but it's pretty impressive compared to, say, the S series phones from Samsung that didn't sell that much for in comparison to the foldables. So there's plenty of excitement in that sense. So yeah, it's unfolding really quickly in that sense. Moving on to wearables, because, you know, those also get leaked. We got a new leak for a smartwatch. We've talked about the Galaxy Watch 4 that's already out. But get this, there's another wearable that's coming, and this one is obviously more iconic. The Fitbit Charge 5. We already, there have been renders of the Charge 5, and now it's kind of been leaked in full. So, if you're kind of curious, the Fitbit Charge 4 has interestingly a whole bunch of things going for it, being that this is, especially given that Fitbit is now owned by Google. I mean, I have to check for that. I mean, based on what I know, that it's been subject to regulatory approval, and that means it's been taking a while since, you know, Fitbit is sort of Fitbit would be a part of Google, but it is part of Google in that sense at this point. I mean, we have a new Fitbit that's going to be coming out soon. That's just like the Charge 4. Which has all the now the Charge 5, though, the big difference really is that you have all the great features of Charge 4 in general, but you get more, or you get sort of additionally, you get 7 days of battery life, 50 meters of water resistance, 24/7 heart rate monitoring, built-in GPS, 20 exercise modes, automatic activity tracking, which is kind of cool to have at that price. Interestingly enough, this will cost $179. This is a bit more expensive, $30 extra compared to the Charge 4 that came out. I don't know when, it came out last year in that sense. Now, interesting enough, if you connect it with your phone and it'll work with iOS or Android, at least, you'll be able to see stress, be able to track your stress, health metrics and much more, and get a daily readiness score. Daily readiness score. That's kind of like the fitness goal ring that you get on the Apple Watch, except that feature, the daily readiness feature, is only available to those who have Fitbit Premium. I don't know how to say that properly. Fitbit Premium, which is their subscription service. They're going to offer a few more fitness metrics for a subscription. They got to make money somewhere, right? So, you know, if they offer it in a subscription, that makes sense. Interestingly enough, it'll support Fitbit Pay. It won't have Google Assistant. I don't know why or how, but okay, that makes sense that it doesn't have Google Assistant. Probably. I don't know about you, but yeah, it is an interesting thing nonetheless. There's nothing much to say here, other than this is really Fitbit's top wearable. The daily readiness score thing is interesting, because it's kind of their answer to Apple's, you know, fitness rings, which you cross the rings, you know, you win here if you have a high, you know, score, you're healthy, you know. So it's kind of fascinating, to say the least. And actually, it looks kind of lean and slim. Quite compact, so you won't even feel it being on your wrist. And then you have like this touch strap on the left side, so you could sort of drag around the display, which is interesting nonetheless. So yeah, it's quite an interesting little product that has already been leaked. So let's see, hopefully this should be more about it when it officially launches though. So that's interesting. Moving over, this week, pretty much, in the world of video games, is Gamescom, which is the European E3, as much as I'll explain it in simple terms, the European E3. And obviously a whole bunch of publishers and folks have announcements with new games and updates to popular games and stuff. Xbox did their sort of their kind of main event today, where they talked about a bunch of new games and updates and some things that they wanted to share, obviously before the holiday season in general. Interesting enough, the first thing we got to mention is that, and this is the big shocker news, you could say, shocker, Xbox is bringing its game streaming functionality, its cloud gaming service, as it likes to call it, to Xbox Series X, S, and Xbox One consoles this holiday season. So November, December, you'll get an update and you should be able to start streaming games straight from your Xbox console. But already you could do it from your computer, from your phone, tablet, from your foldable, and other devices, but now you could use your Xbox to stream games from the internet, which is, I think, is a big deal. And obviously for this you'll need Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, and with it you'll be able to play over 100 high quality games from the Xbox Game Pass library without needing to download or start installing partially the game. You just hit play, and if your internet's very fast, it will go right in and start playing it right away. And it's great, say if your friends are into some other game that you haven't downloaded or have a disc, you could sort of get online, you can start streaming the game and join on the action with them. And I think that's pretty cool nonetheless. And obviously if you like the game and it's on Xbox Game Pass, you can download it and play it further on your console. The best part about it is that you get the full 1080p 60 frames a second resolution when streaming, compared to playing it natively on the Xbox, where, say on the Xbox One, certain games would play only at 30 frames a second to maintain a high resolution, or 60 frames a second but not at 4K, for example. So you won't have those frame rate or resolution sacrifices. Interesting enough, you will be able to play Series X and S exclusive games on your Xbox One. Now this point is interesting. We all know that there's been chip shortages the entire year, and it's been difficult to get your hands on a brand new Xbox in general. I mean, good luck finding the Series S and X in stock. If I go to Amazon, or if I just type Xbox Series X Amazon, just type it for fun and try to find the console. If I just click on the listing for it on Amazon, I'll just show it right there. And where is it? And not only is it sold out, but if you want to get it from other sellers on Amazon, you'll have to pay almost $800-$900 for the console. Very expensive right now. So I kind of can see the practicality with Microsoft offering game streaming for those who have Xbox Ones to allow them to play next-gen games straight away, which sort of solve issues that are out there with streaming, with playing next-gen games, because you can't get a next-gen console all that easily. So that's kind of interesting nonetheless. So that's the thing they're bringing out, obviously, during the holiday. Now, and they shared a whole bunch of extra things during the event. So some brand new games like Dying Light 2, what else? The Gunk, and apparently according to them, it's the first 3D project from the folks who brought over the SteamWorld series, if you know those punk kind of games, crafting a more cinematic and immersive experience than anything they've done before, with a story-driven sci-fi exploration game. Pretty cool, huh? And on top of that, publishers like Humble Games announcing that they're going to bring the whole bunch of games on Xbox consoles on day one, and they'll be available with Game Pass, which is pretty cool. And you got, and as I said, you got some new titles like Wasteland 3 Cult of the Holy Detonation. Again, I'm not into video games, so if I'm kind of going through these details a bit horribly, then apologize. Apologies. Why did I say apologize? Apologies in that sense. And a new ship set in Sea of Thieves, if you're into that. And then, interestingly enough, Microsoft Flight Simulator, there'll be a new update coming on September 7th for the game, where you're able to, they'll have a new aircraft that you can play in called the Volo City Air Taxi, which will be available as an update in November. Along with that, you'll be able to get able to see Germany, Austria, and Switzerland with better aerial imagery and high-resolution maps, which I think is important if you play Air Flight Simulator. Some new updates with the games. And Forza Horizon 5 is coming on November 9th. But interesting enough, they've shared the first 8 minutes of gameplay of the game itself. Along with that, the cover of the game will feature the Mercedes AMG 1 and the Ford Bronco, which I think is pretty cool nonetheless. And on top of that, they're announcing a special limited edition Xbox controller that you can get for the game's release. That'll cost $75 and it'll come out at the same time as the game, that is sort of inspired, that has a yellow transparent back and sort of has a bit of powder sprayed across it, sort of showing kind of in memory for the game, which I think is pretty cool. So if you're into limited edition games consoles, definitely want to check this out. But yeah, aside from a couple of new games updates and the fact that Xbox is now offering streaming on, you could stream their games on their consoles, I think that's a big deal. Significantly, it's a bit of an big upgrade, if you ask me, and a bit of an update, because now you could do a lot more with your Xbox. And if you have an Xbox One, you could play a lot of these Series X and S games that are not, you can't get on Xbox One already itself, but also you can't get the consoles yet. So I think it's pretty cool that they're offering that function. And you gotta have Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, so that's pretty cool nonetheless. What do you think of everything you've heard today? All the new gadgets, all the little tidbits and news, and obviously the fact that Xbox now lets you stream games, obviously, from your Xbox, your Xbox One and stuff. What do you think of everything I've heard today? Let me know on Instagram and Twitter. I'm @say_my199. Follow me there if you can. Subscribe to the show where we listen to podcasts. Share this to your friends and family as much as you can. Really help spread the word. And yeah, till Thursday, this is your boy Malin signing out. Have an amazing day. And take care and get vaccinated, all right? Thank you for listening. Ciao.